Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yart Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church. What an honor to be back.
We're so teaching, glad to have you back.
Teaching Sunday school yesterday here in Colorado, Denver Bible Church. Back from England, Doug McBurney,
yes.
Welcome.
Hey, I'm glad to be here. Glad that you're back at altitude.
Yeah, what a great trip we had. I think it would make sense to share with the audience why Will Duffy and I went to England.
Because I had been reporting on the air that you were making one last ditch effort to save Great Britain from herself. But that was just for fun. That's not why you went.
Well, later in the show, I'll let you know what the Queen said.
No, I thought you alluded in an email to possibly meeting the Queen or maybe seeing the Queen.
I was only kidding.
Oh, okay.
But I stayed right down the street.
Is that right?
The whole trip was amazing. There were two halves to it. The first half was to research the translation of the King James Bible at Oxford.
Oh, yeah.
And the second half was for Real Science Radio to interview scientists and engineers, mathematicians at four prestigious universities in England, at Oxford, at Liverpool, Leeds, and Portsmouth.
Wow.
And we accomplished three of the interviews. A fourth, the professor from a fourth has agreed by phone soon. He was traveling. So anyway, we should, I guess we should start at the beginning.
So you started out going to research or learn about how the King James Bible was actually translated.
Yes.
Right? With no mystery, just the actual documents. Because in England, they still have the documents.
How it happened.
That's amazing that they still have all that.
Yes. Well, in Oxford, it's the world's oldest English-speaking school.
Yeah.
In the Bodleian Library. I mean, they filmed parts of
Harry. Is that where you stayed, the Bodleian?
We didn't. The Bodleian.
Is that?
No.
Is that a motel?
No. No, that's a library.
Well, the Bodleian. I see the spelling now.
Hundreds.
Bodleian.
They filmed parts of Harry Potter series at the Bodleian, right down the street at Christ Church.
Wow.
This library is hundreds, like 400, I don't know, 500 years. Incredible. The volumes in these libraries, treasures, world treasures.
Yeah.
Forget treasures of Britain, that's true, but they're world treasures.
Yeah.
And so we had permission, Will Duffy, longtime producer of Bob and Yart Live, he spoke to the conservator there of rare books, got permission for he and I to have access to a 400-year-old Bible that was used by the translators of the King James to make their translation.
Okay, wait a second now. So he made these arrangements before you ever departed from our shores.
Yes.
Okay, so everything was in place.
Yes. And while we were there, we asked to see other rare books.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. They treated us like royalty.
Really?
We're two Americans.
So you'd ask for some artifact and they would bring it and show it to you?
In fact, Wycliffe Hall at Oxford, they've got this Reverend Dr. So-and-so.
Yeah.
I won't give his name. Uh-huh. But he is an expert, been there for decades in Old Testament and Hebrew. By our second day, he comes up to us in the rare reading room. He's like, how in the world did you guys get access? I've wanted access to this.
Oh, wow.
How do you guys have access to this? It doesn't make sense.
Well,
we just smiled and we got his contact info so we could stay in touch.
Neat.
We had wanted to talk to him. So anyway, we spent days with this very valuable piece of history to understand the process and to, you know, look into the thought process, the minds of the translators.
Mm.
And you could do it. The way they did the work was they had six companies of scholars, two at Oxford, two at Cambridge, and two at Westminster Abbey. And they did the translation work. Then they had a system of rules, 15 rules, and then they would take their work, individual translators, about 40 of them, and they would begin to compile their work into the work of the companies. Then they would share all their work with the other companies. And it was really an amazing process, tremendous effort. you end up with a lot of respect for their diligence. They really did a great job.
So was it obvious to you that they were a lot smarter than the average scholar today when you go through their...
Well, they were, you know, they were... These were basically the faculty professors of Hebrew, of Greek, of New Testament, wow, Old Testament at these places of study. And so, yeah, they were among the world's leading scholars, sure.
Well, that's awesome. Now, you said something that I didn't quite understand. You said you were looking at an English Bible that was used in the translation process.
I
had not heard that before because I thought that when you translated a Bible, you go to the Greek and the Hebrew and all that.
You know, they had 15 rules, and a couple of the rules explained that you need to start with this Bishop's Bible.
That's the 500-year-old Bible you
have? 1602.
1602, so over 400 years old.
Yeah, it was first translated in 1568, and then they put out a new edition in 1602. And so rule number one was you use the text of the Bishop's Bible, and you stay as close to that as the original languages will permit.
Oh, wow, interesting.
So if they thought the Bishop's Bible did a perfect job and the language hadn't changed much, then they could just say, we're done. But they did make thousands of changes to the Bishop's Bible. Another rule said, if the Bishop's Bible isn't good enough to the original, then go with the Geneva Bible, the Matthew's Bible, all these other, they listed four or five other Bibles.
English Bibles.
English Bibles. So in other words, the work that's been done so far, in the first 10 English Bibles to have been translated, in the previous 600 years, there have been 10 of them. Stick with those books as much as you can.
Well, that makes sense from just a trying to get the job done kind of point of view.
Well,
the work has been done and it's good quality work.
Right, and the effort, it was good quality work.
Yeah, wow.
So, at any rate, so you learn a lot. You see how they translate, and you can see the stages of translation in the marginalia, in the notes.
You're looking at handwritten notes.
Handwritten notes.
From 400 years ago.
Yes. Oh, and to read those notes, it takes quite a skill because you have to be able to read secretary hand from an Elizabethan historical perspective.
Okay.
You don't just show these notes to somebody on the street and they read them.
Apparently not. I didn't even understand what you just said.
So
it's going to be hard to read.
You know, the easy stuff is like the S's are F's.
Are F's. I remember that.
That's the easy stuff.
But there's more.
But then it's all. So when you're trying to decipher their handwriting, you compare it to there's thousands of notes, handwritten notes. And so because there are thousands and there are multiple scribes, it goes through individual scribes, translators, to the companies, through three stages of translation work this Bishop's Bible participated in, so to speak. And so you learn the handwriting of the different scribes and translators, and you see, it's just astounding.
Yeah.
It really is fascinating.
That must have been. Now, you saw some other Bible versions
that I
had not been familiar with.
Well, there was a 1631 version of the King James.
Okay.
And the king got really angry when it was printed.
Yeah.
In fact, he did a recall. Remember the NIV was published here in the U.S. and Focus on the Family was distributing it.
Yeah.
You know, make a donation, you get a Bible. And they did a recall. Focus on the Family did because it was the gender neutral version of the NIV.
Really?
In England, that's the only version of the NIV you can buy. They don't sell the normal NIV.
Mm.
They only sell the gender-neutral version, which is inappropriate.
That's
intentionally modifying the scriptures to make them politically correct for your day.
Wow. So, I did not know that.
So where the Bible may refer to God as he, they'll attempt to recast the sentence to avoid the masculine pronoun.
Right. Now, that's just, that just proves that no matter what you did over there, you can't save England from herself. It's just too late.
Yeah.
That's just sad. I did not know that. That's kind of shocking,
Well,
actually.
So James Dobson, to his credit, did a recall because he didn't know that they were distributing the gender-neutral NIV, the New International Version.
But I remember when that happened. So something similar happened in 1631 or 1632?
Yeah, so the printer prints in the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, thou shall not commit adultery.
Yes, he
accidentally left out a word.
It would have to be not.
He left out the word not.
That's so, the Bill Clinton version.
This is the Clinton Bible. So, but this teaches us something about the way God revealed the scriptures, because everyone knew instantly that it was a mistake. Everyone knew.
One would hope, right, yes. It was obvious.
The people who hated God knew that it was a mistake.
I believe you're right.
Barack Obama would know that it was a mistake.
Yes.
Right? ISIS would know that everyone knew that it was a mistake.
It's a typo.
The Pope knew that it was a mistake.
Even the Pope.
And these were Anglican Catholics who did the King James. Right. Even the Pope would agree that this was a mistake.
Some resistance from the staff here.
So,
not a big fan of the Pope.
So at any rate,
we'll get to him later.
The king did a recall. Find the printer, the royal printer.
Oh, boy. He must have been scared.
And so, but one of those Bibles... is in the Bodleian.
Wow, you get to see the actual...
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing.
It's an octava, so it's small. It's 1/8 size of the Bishop's Bible.
Oh, wow.
So it was a small format print. But we went through that Bible and photographed, and we photographed all the other chapters where the same command appears, knowing that it would be correct, and it was, of course.
Right, right.
So high resolution, beautiful photos.
Well, I remember that you had been looking... for photos of the various typos in the Bibles over the years. They're kind of hard to find.
Right.
So in gaining access to these manuscripts, these books, they let you take your phone in there, take pictures?
Yeah.
Wow.
We had a camera that's worth thousands of dollars.
They let you take a camera?
Well, no tripods, no special lighting.
But they, wow.
But we've got high resolution photos.
You could have the best pictures of these translations.
We do.
Extant.
We do.
Today. Yes.
Yeah.
I believe you probably do.
We do.
Who else would do this?
Well, I don't know, but.
But you did.
Doug, in the 1602 Bishop's Bible, it's called by the scholars, they call it the 1602 Bod, B-O-D. Mm. The 1602 Bod, we have the best resolution photos of that Bible available in the world. It's not available digitized, so it's not online. But for research purposes, Will Duffy and I, working for this King James Only debate to begin November 2nd, we have been preparing by reading the scholarly works and the popular works, and we've interviewed the world's leading expert on the translation of the King James. Just that we're putting in an effort that will make it worthwhile for the readers of the debate. It's a 5-round debate, so that it'll be worth their time and effort just to read the debate on King James Only versus Will Kinney, who's one of the KJO's leading advocates.
Right. So this debate is going to take place at theologyonline.com starting November
2nd at high noon.
At high noon.
Yeah.
All right. And so there's a movement out there that says some people are even so extreme as to say that if you don't believe the King James is inspired, then you're probably not even a Christian.
Well,
that's the extreme.
That's the extreme. The official view of the majority of the movement is that the King James is the only inspired scripture on earth today.
Right. And so it's a worthwhile debate to have. It'll be at Theology Online.
Yes.
Starting November 2nd at high noon.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to have to tune into that.
So that was the first half. And then there are various documents that are extant, still in existence, that have the translator's own notes.
Wow.
And so we now have access to all of them.
That's amazing.
In the preparation work. Which was quite a task to do.
So you spent most of the first part of the trip in a dark, large library, just like you would think of in England.
The Rare Books Reading Room, and actually the Bodleian, part of that now, as they've expanded, is the Westin. I tell you, this Westin family, they got a lot of money.
Oh, the Westin Hotel people.
Well, the British Museum now has this lobby. It must have cost $25 million for the lobby, and real big, engraved in marble, the Weston family.
Okay.
So there's a new library at Oxford, the Weston, and that's where they've put the rare reading room. I mean, you could read your books in the Harry Potter rooms yeah. at the 400-year-old Bodleian.
By candlelight.
Or you could read, and we spent time there too because it was just awesome.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. There now are you, books you can't, your finger, if your finger comes close, just barely touches the book, an alarm goes off. And Will Duffy, he doesn't believe it, you know? So he says, well, what if you just barely touch? I'm like, Will, don't, and the alarm goes off.
And you were allowed to stay after yeah, all that?
Yeah. It was really great.
Oh, wow.
So then Will had to return because duty calls.
He has to work, right?
Yeah.
He's got a wife and children.
Yeah. Right? And I'm the host of Bob and Yurt Live and Real Science Radio, pastor of Denver Bible Church. So I had another 5 days to continue now to the science portion of this research trip.
Right, the Real Science Radio part.
Yes. And what a great opportunity. Again, it was the goal was to do research at two museums, the British Museum, which is history of man.
It's a real museum.
Oh.
Yeah. Not Denver's Museum of Nature and Science.
No, the skeptics used to say, for example, that the Bible's wrong. There was never a city of Nineveh. Jonah went to Nineveh. They say, forget the whale. The city never existed.
Right. I remember that.
And they said there was never such a thing as the Assyrian Empire.
Yes, they used to say that.
And so then archaeologists dug up in the desert of northern Iraq the riches of the Assyrian Empire.
Yeah. They don't say that so much anymore now.
No.
No, they don't.
And so huge reliefs carved in stone that adorned the palaces of the kings.
So this is where many of those artifacts ended up?
Ended up.
Wow.
Because Britain plundered the world, along with National Geographic.
Okay.
They just plundered. They took anything they wanted. Right. Egyptians, dead or alive, they just took them. They put them in their exhibits. But the British Museum is an astounding resource for the world. And so to be there and at then the Natural History Museum in London couldn't have been greater opportunity. But first it was go to these four universities and attempt to get interviews.
Oh, that's right. You're going to track down four professors.
With professors on creation evolution issues, atheism. And these are Christians, these professors. And we did manage to get three of the interviews recorded on site, on location. And the fourth, the professor has agreed he was traveling to a phone interview. So, Lord willing, that'll happen soon. But, Doug, let me give you an idea of the kinds of scientists that I got to interview. Professor Steve Taylor from Liverpool University. England is fighting the war on terror.
Yes.
Obama, not so much.
England's, they're making
And so they're concerned about chemical weapons coming across their border.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to Steve Taylor, who is a brilliant scientist, and they ask him to develop these mass spectrometer devices so that if somebody's got a chemical weapon in their trunk as they're coming, that's the wrong example. Because England is an island nation.
But they got the channel.
Yes.
They got the channel.
Oh, they got the channel.
Yeah, they drive cars right over there now.
So if somebody, say they're flying into Heathrow, or they're bringing in a chemical weapon, that they will be able to, using technology, be able to detect that chemical weapon. Imagine how difficult that is.
Well, it sounds like a tough job.
We're talking about picking out of the air atoms and molecules and determining what they've come from.
Yes.
This is Star Trek type of tricorder, Spock kind
of
stuff.
It does, because there's probably a lot of different chemicals that could be involved in different quantities. And it's very
this
tricky.
Is Spock kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So Steve Taylor was tasked with that effort, his team, and he's a brilliant scientist. And so we talked through creation, biblical creation, young earth creation, and how that is a tremendous boon to the advance of science. And it's atheism and evolution that are science stoppers.
Yeah, wow.
So creation is not a science stopper. It's quite the opposite.
Absolutely. So that Steve Taylor is
Professor Steve Taylor.
Is it safe to say he's a young earth creationist?
He is.
He's a believer.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't know they still had those in England. That's encouraging.
They have a few. He loves the Lord Jesus Christ.
Wow.
And this was the same with the other professors, Dave Rosevere and Andy McIntosh. When I went to Portsmouth, so I went all over the country. You know, we're at Oxford, which is a bit west of London.
Right.
Will flies back to the U.S. So I get on a train and go south to Portsmouth.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing I see getting off the train, and you're at the South Sea there, there's these historic warships.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just awesome. It couldn't have been a neater place to visit. So I get off the train, and I look to this row of shops right on the waterfront. And the first one says Genesis Expo.
Genesis Expo?
Genesis Expo. There's fossils for sale.
Ah.
You go in, and it's an entire presentation of young earth creationism.
Really?
It's true. It's fabulous.
So anyone who gets off the train there has got to basically walk right by this place.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And when I walk in the door, there's the front desk and the gal, Barbara, who's so wonderfully helpful. A young guy named Prosper, 20-year-old guy named Prosper. Christian mom.
Wow.
And behind the desk, I see when she stands up, there's on her seat a book that I notice. I recognized.
Huh?
It's called In the Beginning.
Get out of here.
By Dr. Walt Brown.
Are you
Dr. serious? Dr. Walt Brown. So that was the first specific creation material I saw in England was Walt Brown's In the Beginning.
There is hope for England yet.
And I asked her about the book, and she said, I got to say that's my favorite creation book. I said, me too.
Wow.
And so we're going to send to Barbara our video on the global flood and the hydroplate theory. She's eager to see that. And young Prosper, he'd like to view that too.
Oh, that's awesome.
So then I interviewed Dr. Rosevere there.
Now tell me about him. I'm not familiar with that name.
PhD in chemistry. So he realized as a young kid that the evolution story he was being taught in school was simply untenable.
Mm.
Life is too complex to have this blind process explain anything, let alone everything. So it was really neat. And I asked him, Dave, but isn't that a science stopper? You're now a young teenager. You can't do science.
That's right. His career should have been over.
Because you reject evolution. You believe God created us. There's no way you could be a scientist. He said, well, Bob, not only did I go on to earn my PhD, Dr. Rosevere.
A real PhD, by the way, in a hard science.
In chemistry. Yeah. Not like
communications.
Yeah, not Richard Dawkins, evolution for non-scientists. Not that. This is real hard science.
Right.
And he said, but I brought many other students through their educational career to where they earned their PhDs in chemistry.
Wow.
So, you know, it's just awesome. And then you get to the University of Leeds, where, and Doug, this is all a preview to Real Science Radio, because Lord willing, the quality of those interviews we did on site is good enough that we'll air them.
Oh, great.
Hopefully over the next, you know, coming weeks.
Yes.
But University of Leeds, Professor Andy McIntosh, he is a Christian, a believer, loves the Lord, knows that God created us, there's a global flood. He's working for their Royal Air Force on fighter jets, trying to figure out how to reduce the drag so that they can go, you know, faster. That's what everybody wants to do.
Right.
And I said, when I'm introducing him, I said, and when you're trying to save the free world, this is important.
Yeah.
He's like, Bob, you're exaggerating. I'm not doing all that. What? I'm just the scientist reducing the drag on the fighter jets.
Well, that might just kill two or three more terrorists, and that could win a battle right there.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I appreciated his work. And then that work sparked interest he had because his PhD was in combustion. And
that's another science where you can't make up the answers. It's really hard. A lot of math.
Exactly.
Combustion. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And so that sparked his interest, pun intended, in the Bombardier Beetle.
Ah, yes, one of our favorites.
Because the Bombardier Beetle, it's doing actual combustion, and if you're going to have these volatile chemicals,
yeah,
and you're just evolving to try to figure out how to use them as a weapon,
right?
You're gonna kill yourself
at some point. Yeah.
It's like all those suicide bombers who met Muhammad at their kitchen table.
Oh, yeah, a little premature meeting there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and they met who? Arafat, Muhammad,
yeah,
and Lucifer.
All
at the same time.
At the same time, right.
It's like, Muhammad, what are you doing here? So if a suicide bomber has a hard time figuring out on his kitchen table what to mix and what not to mix,
mm-hmm.
imagine that you're a beetle,
right,
and you're mixing these chemicals, and you're trying to figure out how to keep them separate and how to combine them as a weapon, you're obviously going to kill yourself.
Yeah.
How many hundreds of generations of beetles killing themselves before they turn it into an effective weapon?
But wouldn't there be no beetles? In short order, there wouldn't be any more beetles.
Right, that's called an extinction-level event.
I believe so.
When your species has to figure out how to mix these. First of all, how do you get these?
First, you got to make them.
You got to
keep them apart.
Which is unknown to this day how a beetle can do that.
That's just amazing.
Dr. Andy McIntosh.
He got interested in the Bombardier Beetle.
Yeah. And he did a lot of great work.
Oh, fantastic.
And so teaching people that evolution is the science stopper and creation opens the mind of the scientist to be able to make discoveries.
Wow.
Fred Williams and I have done a show where we go through what's all the technology and the discoveries enabled by Darwin.
Yes.
Versus by all the creationists.
That is an awesome
like
show.
Like Isaac Newton and Kepler and so on.
It's not even a contest.
The answer is there are no technologies that were enabled by Darwinism.
Not a single.
None.
No.
And there are hundreds enabled by the creation scientists who made real discoveries.
Yeah.
The only thing Darwinism has enabled is people getting jobs teaching Darwinism.
Yes, like Richard Dawkins.
That's it.
Right, we'll get to him later.
That's it.
So you nailed three interviews. You got actual audio.
Yes.
That we hope to put on the air on Real Science Radio on a Friday.
Jamie Schofield should be working on them as we speak.
And then the fourth, we're gonna wait because that's something that may happen by phone.
Yes.
And that's somebody everybody's heard of.
Yes.
I think. Everybody who's anybody. Yeah.
Big name.
That's awesome.
So, Doug, then there was so much more.
Well, let's get together again. We'll talk about it.
So fun. What a great trip. So thank you, Doug, for holding down the fort.
Anytime.
While Will Duffy and I were gone, and everyone at Denver Bible Church and out there in the audience, may God bless you guys. See you soon.